At Clash of Champions, you guys beat the pee-pee out of us.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pee-pee? What do you mean pee-pee?
Have you watched the television show lately? Vince McMahon has lost his mind. The man doesn't have it anymore.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 462 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, September 25th. 2016. I am the Solid Monster. It is Clash of Champions Sunday, which means we're going to be doing predictions here in a little bit. But first, I want you guys to check out Wrestle Rumble. If you've never heard of it before, Wrestle Rumble is a monthly pick'em contest for WWE pay-per-views. They are doing one for Clash of Champions this weekend. You get a single entry for $10. You can get three entries for $20. And the winner is the person in the end with the most points. And the way you earn points is by correctly picking the winners of each match at the pay-per-view. Plus, you can guess the times of the match and other stuff. We're not counting any matches on the kickoff show, so just be aware of that. You could win up to $500 and two lower-level tickets to NXT TakeOver Toronto. And the winners will be announced by the end of SmackDown Live this Tuesday. So get in on this. I'm trying it myself. It sounds like a lot of fun. Visit WrestleRumble.com. And there you can sign up, fill out your entry form on the website. Deadlines, just so you know, is 7:59 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. So you have up until the very end of the kickoff show. That is the latest that you can submit your entry form. WrestleRumble.com. Or you can visit them on Twitter. At WrestleRumble is their handle. So get in on that. That should be a lot of fun. Also, Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial of its service for the next 30 days. A lot of you guys cashed in on your free book last weekend. I want to say thank you for that. And there is still time to do so. If you sign up with our link, which is audibletrial.com/solomonster, you go through the sign-up process, you won't be billed for the duration of the 30 days unless you continue beyond that. But if at any point you want to cancel in those 30 days and not be billed, you can do that. Either way, when you sign up, you get one free audiobook courtesy of the Sound Off. You get one free book on us, and a lot of you cashed in this past week on The Death of WCW audiobook, which is brand new, the audiobook version. It's up on Audible. It is co-authored, of course, by Brian Alvarez and J.D. Reynolds, or R.D. Reynolds at J.D. I believe Alvarez does the narration for the book. A lot of you... we're very happy to be able to cash in your free copy of The Death of WCW, and so if that's what you would like to do, use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. A lot of people got in on The Death of WCW. You can do the same. Just plug in our URL, sign up, and the book is yours. Even if you cancel, you get to keep it. So get on that. And last but not least here, if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you know the drill. You can go to thesolomonster.com. The PayPal donate button is on the right-hand side of the page. Anytime that you want to make a donation, that's the place to go. $10 or more will get your wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this podcast. $30 or more if you want to get a shout-out for your business, your podcast, your YouTube channel, your social media channel. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Hot Stuff Hector Pena, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, High Society Thurman Taylor IV, Travon the Cannon Clark, Masgrave Micah Harshaw, Ian Lights Out Loomis, Playboy Tiago Lerrero, Tarkin Danger Zone Davis, The Five Tool Player Adam Bartolo, The Chapel Hill High Flyer, Kyle George, Save the World, Sean Tilly, Canadian Destroyer, Rob Morrow, The Gosforth Griller, Graham Bell, Escalade Anthony Giorgio, Matthew Moneybags Morocco, Too Cold Steve-O gets the final shout out here. Shout out to Dando and the Four Finger Discount Podcast, which reviews every episode of The Simpsons from beginning to end. See, they have a podcast for everything. So check them out. And thank you again to everybody who made a donation. All of my PayPal VIPs, to your support, of course, is always appreciated. We are going to be continuing the list that we've been doing for a few weeks now. My list of the 9 greatest interviews, the 9 greatest promos in WWE history. We're doing one per week until our 9-year anniversary show in November. Number 9, of course, was the Vince McMahon Life Sucks promo from SmackDown. Number 8 was the Mark Henry retirement swerve on Raw. Number 7, last week, was Bret Hart's tirade on Raw the week before WrestleMania 13. And number 6 is going to take us back to 2001. And if you paid attention to the intro at the top of this podcast this week, that's probably the biggest hint that I can give you. I basically gave it away, so we'll do that later on in the show. Before we do anything else, I have to explain something I mentioned last week. So, I was talking about the Randy Orton bait and switch last week. I threw out a comment about, hey, somebody pointed out to me that there's a very interesting tweet that Randy Orton liked. He only liked like half a dozen tweets on his Twitter. And there's one very interesting one, and you'll know it when you see it. So naturally, I mentioned that. And somebody smartened him up, and he must have unliked it, because everybody went to his Twitter, and they couldn't find it. And I got message after message after message asking me, I don't see it. Is it? I don't see anything funny or offensive. What is it? What is it? Or what was it? So instead of just sending tweet after tweet telling people what it is, I figure I'll just address it here. So it's very simple. All it was, it's just very, you know, very Randy Orton-esque. He had about half a dozen likes. I went to see what the fuss was about. Most of them were pictures of his wife, like pictures of his new wife when she was pregnant. There might have been like a Connor's Cure tweet that he liked. And right in the middle of it, I'm scrolling. I'm like, whoa! I'm like, okay. It's just a tweet of some guy spraying some fluid in another woman's eyeball. So Randy Orton was having some fun on social media, and, you know, obviously somebody must have smartened him up. He unliked it, and so when everybody went to look, they didn't see anything. So I just wanted to put that to rest once and for all. It was a very X-rated tweet that seemed very much out of place. It literally was just sandwiched between, I think, 2 pictures of his wife. So I don't know if she was aware of that, but he has since wisely unliked the tweet. So no more controversy. Speaking of Orton, he wrestled Brock Lesnar last night at the WWE house show in Chicago. He survived. He is breathing. He does not have any new staples in his head. I got conflicting reports from people. I went on Twitter. I said, how'd the match go? And there were people who were at the show. One person said it sucked. It was over in 5 minutes. It was just Suplex City and, you know, RKO, F5, and that was it. There was another person who said it was pretty good. So to each their own, right? It's all in the eye of the beholder. Apparently, the thing is, it was a short match. Brock won. No surprise there. Very simple. And no blood. So that's a victory for Randy Orton. If Randy Orton can get out of that match unscathed, no staples, no stitches, no blood, no defibrillator, I think that's a win for Randy Orton. Now, sad tweet. I normally save this for the end of the show, but I figure why not change things up a little bit. I was going to give it to Vader. I was going to change my mind last night. I was going to give sad tweet this week to Vader, who was messaged on Twitter, because all bad things happen on Twitter. He was messaged by a girl who, according to her Twitter bio, claims to be an NYU student who doesn't even graduate until 2020, who also claims to be bisexual, for whatever that's worth. She asked Vader to direct message her. She sent him a tweet and said, DM me. And Vader responded by asking, what does DM mean, LOL? Let's get together, Rocky Mountain style. The Vader bomb stands ready. Now, she is probably some 40-year-old dude with 5 bodies locked up in his basement and, like, dead pigeons in his freezer. But the idea that Vader, who clearly doesn't know what the fuck he's doing on Twitter, would end up sending 5 tweets to this girl, or he or she or it or whatever it is, including one with his email address, and he's 61 years old. If we are to believe that she is graduating in 2020, and unless she's like in grad school, that would make her a college freshman. That, my friends, is the very definition of sad tweet. But I said I was going to give it to Vader. Instead, I'm giving it to me. I am staking claim here for the first time since I started doing this. I've been awarded said tweet by USA Today, me and 18 other people, although I could have done without being on this list. This was a list of the 19 saddest tweets coming off of a brutal New York Mets loss on Wednesday night. Seriously, this had to be their worst loss of the entire year. And think about how many agonizing defeats this team has had. I've seen a lot of them, okay? And I've been a Mets fan since I was 4 years old, which also happens to be the last time they ever won a World Series. So on Wednesday, they had a lead. They gave it up. Then they battled back. And then in the end, they had their best hitter at the plate with a chance to win the game in the bottom of the ninth. Like, great dramatics. And they literally had a home run taken away from them. The Braves outfielder, whatever the fuck his name is, he made a leaping catch over the wall. He robbed them of a game-winning home run. The Braves. The Atlanta Braves. The same Braves who were dead last in the division. The same Braves who were something like 30 games under 500 or something ridiculous like that. And worse, I mean, the Mets are in the middle of a wild card race. They're trying to make the playoffs. They got swept at home by one of the worst teams. Soul-crushing. Soul-crushing is what that loss was. Even though the other two teams they're fighting against for that wild card spot, they also lost that night. But that was after the fact. I you know, when the Mets lost, you know, it was just misery. When we found out the other two teams also lost, it was a small consolation. But it's so up and down with this team all the time. Like, the very next night, they get a walk-off win in extra innings, you know, against the Phillies. They had to use, like, 27 players to get it done, which is, like, a franchise record. But, you know, a win is a win. I mean, you could use 50 players for all I care, as long as you win. Then last night, they're down, like, 10-0. 10-0 this team is down last night in, like, the fifth inning. And they fight back to make it 10-8 before finally losing. See, that might have been their best loss of the year, if that makes sense. At least they showed a lot of fight last night. But, you know, the thing you got to understand about Mets fans is that we're very much like wrestling fans. So, I mean, it's no great wonder why I'm a WWE fan. You know, you enjoy the highs, but you're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's so true. You're always waiting for the banana peel to hit the floor, for you to slip and fall on your ass, because you know it's going to happen, right? It's in our DNA. That's just how we are. But I love it when I hear things like, you know, Solomonster, the Mets did go to the World Series last year, and it's been over 100 years since the Cubs have won a World Series, as if that's supposed to make me feel better. You know, like all the excuses Cubs fans have made over the years, like, oh, it's the curse of the goat, it's Steve Bartman, it's our shitty excuse for pizza, gave them all diarrhea. I don't care about the Cubs. The difference is, when the Mets lose, we can admit that it's their own damn fault. We don't blame anybody else. It's their own fault. So yes, thank you, USA Today. I appreciate that. Cody Rhodes. Let's talk some wrestling, finally. Cody Rhodes is set to debut for TNA at Bound for Glory, which I believe is that next week? I think it's next weekend. That pay-per-view's coming up pretty quick. No match specifically announced or anything, but they had a vignette that aired on Impact this past week that revealed that Cody, since they can't call him Cody Rhodes, Cody is coming to TNA. And in the announcement, they had, like, hashtag game changer, which, you know, just made me laugh. No offense to Cody. Cody's a great talent, and I hope he sticks it to WWE and has a lot of fun and gets a big push and you know, does very well for himself. But it's like they set themselves up for failure. Like, people said that about Damian Sandow, and I was a huge Damian Sandow fan, but I knew before Damian Sandow ever set foot in the Impact Zone, this guy ain't going to be a game changer. And look at him now. He's just another guy. Nobody's even talking about him now. I don't know if it's the shitty name. I don't know what it is, but it's like he had his 15 minutes, and now it's like nobody cares. And I hope it's not the same way for Cody, but Cody is no more of a game changer than Damian Sandow was. He's no more of a game changer than Mick Foley was. He's no more of a game changer than Booker T was. And these are all talented people. But TNA's problems go far beyond one person. Unless they're bringing in John Cena or CM Punk, there is no one big star, realistically, that they can get their hands on that's going to turn their fortunes around. I still say it's a poison brand. I mean, you can pump money into it if you want to. Billy Corgan It looks like he's probably going to buy it. We'll probably find out in the next week or two what the deal is there. He can buy it. He can pump money into it. I hope they do, because they need money, desperately need money to pay for the tapings and everything else. But I don't know that it's going to make a difference. I think those initials, I think that brand, I think that name is so poisoned and so damaged after the last 14 years or 15 years, whatever it's been. You need a complete overhaul if you have any chance of doing anything with it. I don't see that changing. So, you know, every time I hear what's a game changer, this person's a game changer, that person's a game changer. With TNA, I don't know that there is such a thing at this point as a game changer. And there's certainly no game changer in terms of an individual talent, because their problems go far beyond that. It usually in TNA, and I'm not trying to knock them, I'm just stating fact here, you would think, well, we're going to bring in someone and their profile, their name value will help lift TNA, it will help propel TNA. Usually it's just the opposite. If somebody comes in with a lot of star power, if somebody comes in with a lot of notoriety, it's TNA that diminishes that. So I just wish they would stop talking about game changer, and actually try to make some moves that will really move the needle. You can bring in all this great talent, but there is no such thing as a game changer. It just, with TNA at this point, it just doesn't exist. They've already announced that his wife Brandy is coming in as a wrestler, not as a ring announcer, which is what she was doing in WWE. And even though Cody can't use the Rhodes name, she can apparently go by Rhodes. She can go by Brandy Rhodes. That's what they're calling her, I guess, because she never used that name in WWE. She was Eden Styles. So very interesting that she can use the Rhodes name and her husband can't. Cody's also working Ring of Honor. He's working their final battle show on December 2nd against who, I guess we don't know yet. But it's interesting he was able to pull that off, working for TNA and for Ring of Honor at the same time, because nobody else, as far as I know, nobody else has done that. Nobody else is allowed to do that, unless they've now dropped that rule. So it seems like Cody is... he's making the rounds. You know, he made that list. Remember that list he tweeted out when he left WWE? He had a list of all the places he wanted to work, people he wanted to work with, and he's checking all those items off that list. So it looks like he's having the time of his life. He's able to work where he wants to against the people he wants to, and he's having a blast. So I say good for him. Speaking of TNA, there was a note in this week's Wrestling Observer that Triple H has sent feelers that he wants broken Matt Hardy in WWE when his TNA contract expires in the spring. Now, who would have ever thought? I read that and I thought to myself, who would have ever thought that Matt would be the Hardy that they wanted back the most? That's a credit to Matt. That is a credit to Matt and the way that this guy has been able to reinvent himself. Not that WWE wouldn't take back Jeff Hardy in a freaking heartbeat if they knew he was available, because you know they would. I mean, they would be crazy not to, especially with this brand split. I mean, they need all the star power they can find. I don't know how to feel about this. I know I'm not watching TNA week to week, but I am paying attention to all of the Broken Matt stuff. I'm very entertained by it. Even if it's just going on their YouTube channel, I check out most of his segments and all the final deletion stuff. And I enjoy it. And, you know, on the one hand, I love what the guy is doing right now. On the other hand, he's doing it in TNA. And I feel like the broken brilliance of Matt Hardy deserves a much bigger platform than Pop TV. Now, supposedly, Matt has a level of creative freedom in TNA that he probably would not have in WWE. I think if you've watched any of those final deletion skits, it's pretty obvious that he's got a lot of creative freedom in that company. He must be doing very well for himself, I'm sure, working indies with whatever, you know, combined with whatever he's making from TNA. I would hate for him to go to WWE and either not be Broken Matt, just be Matt Hardy again, or be Broken Matt, but have them fuck it all up like they've done with so many other things. Here's what I'd say. I would love to see him in WWE if he negotiated creative control for himself. Not necessarily like on match finishes and that sort of thing, but like I would want the guy to have control over the direction of his own character. I don't know that they would be willing to do that for anybody except, you know, a certain orange man with a horseshoe mustache. But they should. They absolutely should. That, and they have to allow Vanguard 1 to fly around the arena during his matches. If he can do that, if he can pull that off, if he can get himself that sweet creative control clause, then I would love to see him go back to WWE. But you got to remember, you know, when Matt left WWE, I think this would have been around 2009, 2010. It's been a while. It's been 5 or 6 years since he's been out of WWE, or longer. He wanted out of there so bad, he basically got himself fired on purpose. He started acting really crazy. Now, he had a lot of issues back then. He was, whatever it was that he was doing, he had a lot of issues. I think we all remember that. He was getting into trouble every week. I certainly ranted enough about him on this podcast back then. It got to the point of just being ridiculous, and he was putting other people in danger, DUIs, all this ridiculous stuff. He was in a bad place. But as I remember it, and maybe I'm just, I don't know, maybe I think I heard this, but he did interviews after the fact, and I think he basically admitted that, look, he was kind of acting strange and acting a certain way because he wanted out. He was almost doing it on purpose just to get out of his contract. That's how miserable he was working for WWE and being on the road all the time with no time off. So the fact that he would want to be fired and would get himself fired speaks volumes about how he felt about working for that company. He was so unhappy. And I remember him also talking about some storyline with Christian, I think it was, that he was coming up with ideas for, and it ended up going nowhere. So he was pitching ideas. They were getting shot down. And that's exactly what I mean. Why go back to that? Why go back to being frustrated and happy unless you can negotiate the type of deal that would make you happy? Seems like he's in a good place in his life. He's able to make his own schedule, call his own shots. I'd say, you know, I mean, my first thought is don't give that up. You know, Broken Matt is more over than half the guys on WWE's own roster right now. Roman Reigns was in the ring the other night with the crowd chanting delete, delete, delete at him. You know, if they want this guy that badly and he decides to go, I hope he does it on his own terms. Now, of course, we have no idea how this whole TNA ownership situation is going to turn out. If Billy Corgan is going to buy it, we don't know what's going to happen. So if he suddenly doesn't have that TNA money anymore come next year and Broken Matt has no place on TV anywhere, he may not have the kind of negotiating leverage that he would have now. You know, look, a lot can change in the next 6 months, but I hope that if they are interested and they do make a play for him, I mean, look, he can do whatever he wants. It's his own life, but as a fan of that character, I hope that, you know, he has the ability to negotiate a deal that he's happy with. And if he can do that, then I would love to see Broken Matt in WWE. But if not, then I say just keep doing your thing. You got a good thing going right now. Why mess that up? So we are going to do Clash of Champions predictions here. We'll do them after Raw. Doesn't really make too much sense to go through the predictions and then talk about Raw. So we'll do Raw first. Raw was live from Memphis, Tennessee, this past Monday. Almost 2,000 votes in the Insta poll I put up on Twitter. 36% thumbs up, 64% thumbs down. You guys, by and large, did not like this show. The ESPN website, I thought this was funny. They had a great write-up on this show. It was a pretty brutal write-up on Raw. It's funny since, you know, they're partners with WWE and everything. I agree with what I read there in that this show did nothing to get me excited. There's a pay-per-view tonight, and it did nothing to get me excited for it. And I was also not overly encouraged by how they handled the introduction of the Cruiserweights, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. They were also beaten again, for those of you who were wondering. They were beaten again in the ratings by Love and Hip Hop Hollywood. I got a lot of positive feedback from my Love and Hip Hop talk last week. Let me just say, I have no intention of reviewing this show every week or talking about this show. I was just interested in what the show was about because I had heard of it before, but I didn't know what the hell it was. And now it's number two, number three in the cable ratings. I'm like, I got to read up on this thing, what the show is about. Well, I did flip onto the show this week because I was bored by Raw. It took me all of 10, 15 minutes to get bored by the show. I did flip over. I did watch some of it. Many of you on Twitter did beg me to review it, which I'm not going to do a full review, but this is what I saw. This is what I saw on Love and Hip Hop. I took some very, very, very crude, basic notes here. I saw some dude in a leather jacket drive up to a club on his motorcycle. He looked like he was looking for trouble. He went inside the club. He got up in some woman's face. I'm not sure what that was about. It looked like he knew her. I don't know if he did or not. Meanwhile, there is a really attractive woman on the show. I don't think I got her name, but she was planning her wedding. Actually, I think that might have been... there's a woman on the show named Princess. Or Princess, I think it's her. So she's the one getting married to Ray J. Whatever her name is, she's getting married to Ray J. One can only hope that Ray J is wearing more clothes for his wedding than he was the last time I saw this guy. So his fiance seemed to be under a great deal of stress. I would imagine any bride would be before her big day. I wouldn't know because I'm not married, nor do I plan to be. And if by chance I do one day get married, I won't be the one doing the planning, so it's not my problem. So she starts crying, and her wedding planner, who was wearing the biggest earrings I've ever seen in my life, they were almost bigger than her head, she tried to console her, and then later there was some little misery of a woman going off on some dude inside a recording studio. Technically, she was going off on some other woman who wasn't there. Perhaps she was the mistress. I'm just assuming. I believe the Italians would refer to her as the Guma, the other woman. See, I get all my knowledge of Italian culture from The Sopranos, as you can see. So she's going off on the Guma, calling her a whack-ass bitch. I mean, she is angry. This woman is angry about something. I can only assume she's a mistress, because why else would she be so pissed? So in the preview for the next episode, which I will not be watching, but in the preview for the next episode, whoever's getting married, I'm not sure if it's Ray J or if there's another couple on the show that's getting married, they apparently didn't bother to tell their families. And so they're at someone's house and there's some reception going on. Everyone's dancing. Everyone's having a good time. And then the couple springs the news on the family that this party is actually a wedding reception. And whoo boy, shit's going to hit the fan now. I can see why this show is beating Raw. I mean, I was right in what I said last week when I said this show sounded like it was absolutely terrible. Because it is. It absolutely is. But yet I couldn't look away. So I would flip back over to it tomorrow night, but the first debate is tomorrow. So that about does it, I think, for the Love and Hip Hop reviews for now. Mick Foley's great punishment on this show for Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins, who defied Mick Foley's orders the week before not to interfere in the main event. Okay, Foley's big punishment was to put Rollins in a match. Ooh, a match. He put a wrestler in a match. He put him in a matchka against Rusev. Rollins' face turned pretty much complete at this point. He did not one but two consecutive tope suicidas, as Mauro Ranallo would say, which is something I don't think I've seen him do since the babyface run that the Shield had, when Rollins he was just a madman back then. He would be doing one dive over the top, run back in the ring, do another dive onto a different side of the ring. I feel like he's lost a step. I don't know if I'm the only one who notices this. He seems a little bit slower to me since the knee surgery, but I mean, that was pretty serious knee surgery. So, you know, if he lost a step or two, I wouldn't be shocked. He's still, I mean, look, he's still quick, but he seems about a step off. So they had this match. The match ended on a lame double count out because they were very obviously too afraid to beat either guy before Clash of Champions. I would suspect, by the way, that Rollins' new theme, that new downstate theme that they recorded for him, that's probably going to debut at the pay-per-view tonight. I heard the instrumental version. People put it up on our Facebook group page. Sounds pretty badass. I think they might be putting lyrics to it. It was maybe a incomplete version that I heard, but it sounds pretty cool. After the announcers said nothing about the double pin last week with Sasha and Bayley in that triple threat match, they finally acknowledged it here on this show in a backstage segment with Mick Foley and all the women. Dana Brooke suggested that Sasha and Bayley fight one another to see who the number one contender is, but instead Foley decided to make it a triple threat match, at Clash of Champions, with Charlotte defending against both Sasha and Bayley. So Dana did not endear herself to Charlotte by saying that. We got a backstage segment that gave off a lot of sexual tension between Seth Rollins and Stephanie McMahon. Seth's in there talking about all the good times they've had in her office together. Why'd you throw our relationship away for Kevin Owens? It's no wonder Triple H pedigreed this guy on his ass. Actually, that makes no sense. You wouldn't pedigree somebody on their ass. He pedigreed his ass. There you go. It's a more appropriate way to say it. He thinks he's sleeping with his wife. That's the only explanation that makes sense on why Triple H would randomly come out and beat the hell out of Seth Rollins. See, I'm left to come up with my own conspiracy theories because it's now been almost a month, okay? It's almost been 4 weeks since Triple H showed up on Raw, and we still have not gotten any follow-up explanation as to why he attacked Seth Rollins, which is completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Here's what I think. I don't think they had an explanation for it. I think Balor got hurt, and it fucked up all of their plans, so they decided, hey, let's bring back Triple H, and we'll swerve everyone. And it made for very exciting TV that night, I will say, but they never gave any thought to why he would attack Seth Rollins. So they may well be figuring out the story as the story itself plays out. But this idea that his own wife, the woman, you know, the mother of his children, the woman he shares a bed with every night, has no idea. I have no idea why he did it. Over 3 weeks in now, I have no idea why her husband did what he did. They've had no conversations about this, really. Just the idea of that is so completely stupid. So Cesaro knotted up the best of seven series with Sheamus, which means it's going to be Game 7 tonight at Clash of Champions. They said the winner gets a title shot, but I assume they're being intentionally vague because it's going to end up being like a U.S. title match. Or actually, who was it who wrote into the show? It was Nick. Nick from Germany wrote into the podcast. He had an interesting idea. His idea was that the final match that we see tonight goes to a draw, and they both get a tag team title match out of it. Maybe even they become like a babyface team. You know, I guess I could see that. I don't think that does Cesaro any favors if you just put him back in a, you know, he had the team with Tyson Kidd and they had a lot of momentum and Tyson got hurt. And now with the brand split, especially if you just put Cesaro back in a team, for Sheamus, it might be a good idea because that guy's doing nothing right now. But for Cesaro, I just think it would be a complete and total waste. I mean, with the brand split, if ever there was a time to try to elevate this guy as a single, this is it. You know, but they could use a win in this best of seven series to get him an eventual championship match. You don't even need to do it on pay-per-view. You don't have to do Cesaro against Kevin Owens, Survivor Series or something like that. You can build it up for an episode of Raw. And then maybe you can transition Cesaro into a program with Brock Lesnar just to give Brock something to do at Survivor Series. And you'll have people who hear that and they scoff. Oh, here he goes again. Still talking about Cesaro and Brock. You know, keep an open mind here, okay? We barely see Brock as it is. I'd like to see the guy work a match at Survivor Series and not just sit at home, right? And I want to see him in there with new opponents. I don't want to see him in there with Randy Orton again. I don't want to see him in there with John Cena or Triple H or any of those people. And he's a Raw guy, so it's got to be somebody on the Raw brand. Because there's plenty of people on SmackDown I'd like to see him in there with, but you can't do that. Although, what am I saying? He just had a whole feud with Randy Orton, who's a SmackDown guy. So I guess these rules don't matter. They don't apply to Brock Lesnar. But I want to see him in there with new opponents. You know, Ambrose was a new opponent. Now, their WrestleMania match was a disappointment, but I still like the fact that it was someone different. I still like that better than the original idea, which supposedly was Brock and Bray. You know, same with Orton. It was someone different. The match was disappointing, but it was someone different. It was a fresh match. Cesaro would be a fresh opponent for him. Now, he would lose, of course. Brock is practically invincible at this point. And as much as I like Cesaro, I am not foolish enough to have Cesaro beat Lesnar, okay? Because whoever beats Lesnar is going to be the man. And even I know Cesaro ain't the man. He's not their guy. But if he goes in there and he matches power with Brock, he doesn't just get suplexed around for 10 minutes. He actually matches him with some power moves before he gets beat. You know what? Hey, I could think of worse things for Cesaro to be doing. And it gives us a Brock match in November instead of him playing Deer Hunter until January. Chris Jericho thinks that Mick Foley is doing a terrible job as the Raw General Manager. And he made a list of all the reasons why. He calls it the List of Jericho. I think Jericho needs to go all the way with this gimmick. Right? He's already got the Gift of Jericho. Now we have the List of Jericho. Every punch he throws, he could call it the Fist of Jericho. You know, that little twist he does whenever someone reverses out of the walls, right? That's the Twist of Jericho. He could start spraying mist in people's faces, like Muda. That'd be the Mist of Jericho. See, I like that. Jericho, by the way, just donated $3,000 to a GoFundMe campaign that was set up for Rico Constantino. Rico, former WWE star. Rico is apparently dealing with some pretty serious health issues. I'm very confused by something, though. Let me mention this here. I'm very confused by something that's going on. So, Kenny Bolin is a friend of Rico's. Kenny Bolin was a former manager in OVW. I think he may have his own podcast now. So that's who Kenny Bolin is. And he claims that he set up a PayPal account so that people can donate directly to Rico himself. Now, the GoFundMe that's out there, apparently Bolin did not set that up. He did not set up the GoFundMe page that people have been tweeting about and donating to. That was apparently set up, as best as I can tell, by some guy named Chris Featherstone, who hosts a podcast called Pancakes and Power Slams. Jericho donated the $3,000 to the GoFundMe. And Bolin did thank him. He did, you know, he did say that he appreciates the donation. But he went on his Facebook page. He basically said that he wished Jericho had donated that money instead to the PayPal address because GoFundMe takes 10%, and now he has no idea how quickly Rico's going to get the money. Look, I'm sure this guy's heart is in the right place. I don't doubt that he is friends with Rico and he's trying to help him out. But why call out Jericho for something like that on Facebook? Like, that is, I mean, I read that and I was like, are you kidding me right now? This guy just donated $3,000 to help this guy out. Now, yeah, okay, well, he didn't PayPal it. You're basically calling him out because he donated to the GoFundMe. That's the whole point the GoFundMe is set up in the first place. So that didn't make him look very good. But, you know, I was on Bolin's Facebook page, right? I'm looking over because he's been posting a lot about Rico. And somebody asked him, hey, did you figure out who set the GoFundMe page up? And Bolin said that Rico thinks, apparently he talked to Rico, and this is what he said. He said Rico thinks it was some guy who interviewed him a while back. So it sounds like even Rico isn't sure exactly who set this thing up. But yet, I go to this other guy's Facebook page, okay? The guy who set the GoFundMe up, this Featherstone guy. I go on his Facebook page. He's got an update. This is from Thursday, okay? So this is a few days ago now, where he claims that Rico texted him to thank everybody for the GoFundMe. So does Rico know this guy or not? I mean, can somebody clear this up for me here? Because I don't know if Rico knows this guy. I'm hearing conflicting things here. He knows him. Now he's not sure who it is. I mean, I'm not about to promote anyone's PayPal or GoFundMe unless I know the money is going to where it's supposed to be going. I was going to mention the address here and everything. I'm not mentioning anything until this gets straightened out. Because this, you know, my spidey senses are tingling here. It's all very confusing. Why even set up a GoFundMe if you have a friend who's telling people, hey, don't use that, use PayPal and not GoFundMe? Doesn't make a lot of sense. I just hope that $3,000 that Jericho donated gets to where it was intended to go. That's all I hope. So anyway, Jericho came out to air his grievances here on this show. He was interrupted by Kaz and Enzo. The Shining Stars came out. I nearly changed the channel. These guys have go-away heat with me. The New Day came out. Big E admitted that they were out there because they literally had nothing else to do. That's what he said. Kofi's like, tell me why we're out here. He goes, we have nothing to do. We have nothing else to do. Funny, that's the only reason I was watching this show. Gallows and Anderson came out. It ended up breaking down into a giant brawl. Sami Zayn came down to attack Jericho. It turned into a 10-man tag. Cass and Enzo won with the rocket launcher on one of the shitty stars. They aired a tribute to Eddie Guerrero as part of Hispanic Heritage Month, which started last week. I watched this thing. All it did, it just reminded me of how much I missed that guy. Eddie was awesome. So, the Cruiserweights are here. At long last. Unfortunately, they didn't open the show with them like I said last week I had hoped they would. In fact, they did the one thing I was afraid of, which was they saved them for the third hour of the show. Or as I call it, the third stage of hell. Now, they did try to make it special somewhat. They had Mick Foley come out to the ring to do the introductions and read off some cue cards. They had him use this old Mark Twain quote, it's not about the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. And it sounded like Foley just completely botched it up. I went back and watched it. He actually didn't, but he kind of stumbled over his words where he made it sound like maybe he fucked up. He said it right the first time, but then he stopped himself, he looked at the crowd, and instead of just moving on, he's like, what, did I get it wrong? And so he said it over again. I'm like, ugh, what a great start this was to this segment. So here's the deal. I get why they would have saved them for the third hour, right? You build them up throughout the show. They put commercials on throughout the whole show. The Cruiserweights are coming. The Cruiserweights are coming. It's like the British are coming. So they build them up throughout the whole show. And you also put them on in the third hour because, let's be honest here, the third hour is the hour that people tend to space out. I mean, even in the crowd is not as hot as they were in hour one or hour two. The people watching at home, I can vouch because I'm one of them. I'm doing everything I can to stay awake. When you have a really hot episode of Raw, I think back to that episode of Raw after Battleground, okay, which I guess would have been the first brand split episode of Raw. That was where Balor beat Reigns in the main event. That was a great show. From start to finish, it kept my interest the entire time. So it is doable. You can have a 3-hour show and keep people's interest. I mean, look, every pay-per-view they do is 3 hours, but that's a different beast, right? That's just straight action. Very limited talking. It's not like they don't have any talking, but it's very limited. It's all action. I mean, some pay-per-views are better than others, but in terms of the TV show, week to week, I mean, let's be honest here, 3 hours of Raw feels like, you know, 90 minutes of Raw or 2 hours of Raw with an hour of filler. And it's hard to sit through. People lose interest. So that might have been part of the thought process here. Hey, let's put these guys in the ring. These guys are going to be balls-to-the-wall action, and we'll get people into the show, or we'll keep them from tuning out. I can understand that. I can understand if that was the mentality. But to me, you got to start this thing out with a bang, right? You've got to start this division out with a bang right out of the gate. You need a hot match with a hot crowd, and the time to do that is at the start of the show. I mean, there's a reason why most episodes of Nitro, at its peak, when they had the luchadors and the Japanese wrestlers, a lot of times they opened the show. I mean, they had multiple cruiserweight matches, but they would open the show with it. You had a hot Rey Mysterio match for 10 or 15 minutes, man? Phew. I mean, that crowd was on its feet the whole time. But then again, I mean, Rey, it is a different era. Rey was doing stuff. Juventud, those guys were doing stuff that really the American audience didn't see. Now it's 20 years later, literally 20 years later, and I don't know, I feel like we've seen everything. I mean, the American audience now has been so exposed to all of the flashy moves. I mean, look, everybody does dives. They do the suicide dives in every single match. Luke Harper doing a suicide dive. I mean, these things have no novelty anymore. But I do still think the Cruiserweights can be a draw, I guess, for this show, can compete. Keep people's interest. I saw one report online. I have no idea where it came from, so I'm going to guess it's bullshit. But there was one report that Vince McMahon has already decreed the Cruiserweights have to slow down, and there's certain moves they're not allowed to do because that's not their safe style. I mean, again, I don't buy that, but if it's true, then they're already cutting their balls off before this thing gets started, because the whole point of the Cruiserweights is that these guys go out there and they fly around. Now, some guys aren't high flyers, like a Noam Dar. He's not a high flyer. He does a lot of technical stuff. They're not all, you know, doing flippy moves, but I mean, that's what a lot of these guys do. They fly around. They do this flashy stuff that just makes you go, wow, that you wouldn't see on a normal episode of Raw. If all of a sudden you're like, well, you can't do that because it's too dangerous, or it's this or it's that, you're already killing it before it has a chance to succeed. It can't fit into a neat little box like everything else. You've got to just let it be what it is. It's got to be different. So now, you know, if you're telling guys you can't do this, you can't. Now look, the Burning Hammer. We saw Brian Kendrick bust out a Burning Hammer against Kota Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Classic. I can understand a move like that being like, you know what? No Burning Hammer. I get that. But if they were to go to these guys and say, look, you can't do this and you can't do that and you got to slow it down, you got to tell a story. The Cruiserweight Classic, they told lots of different stories. And I'm watching those guys, and it didn't look like there were very many handcuffs on them. They were out there doing what they do best, and they told some great stories. Not every fucking match has to be a headlock and a chin lock and slow it down. And I guess the difference here also is you got commercials. They didn't really have commercials in the middle of the matches on the Cruiserweight Classic. So, you know, the WWE formula, you can tell exactly when they're going to commercial. They're so predictable. They're so predictable. And so maybe you got to slow the match down, go to commercial, come back. Okay, fine. Like, that I can understand. But you can't slow these guys down. You've got to let this be exactly what people expect it to be, which is balls-to-the-wall action and flips and dives and flashy moves. And if it's not going to be that, then this thing's already done. This thing's dead. But again, I don't necessarily believe that report. I have no idea where that came from. As far as this goes, you know, in the first week here, I would have opened the show with these guys. That's just what I would have done. They had a fatal four-way to determine a number one contender for the Cruiserweight title at the pay-per-view tonight. A title we never saw because the champion was never shown. This is the other thing that just blew my mind. TJ Perkins was flown into Raw. He posted on Twitter, getting ready to go to Raw, and he showed his sneakers and his belt, and he was all packed and ready to go, so we knew he was there. And when he got there, he found out that you're not on the show. Not even a wave from the stage. Not even for commentary. Not even for a stare down in the ring with the challenger at the end of the match. They did it in the back on YouTube, is when he was confronted by Kendrick. I was bewildered by that decision. How do you not have TJ Perkins on the show? How do you not have the champion on the show? This is the only show before the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view 6 days later. No champion. Week one of the division. I mean, Perkins is by default now the face of this division. Your new champion, and he doesn't even get a cameo on the show. So the match was Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, Grand Metalik, and Brian Kendrick. I thought it was a fun match. I enjoyed it. It was missing the commentary from Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan, but you know, I'm still in CWC mode. I've got to kind of get myself out of that mode. It'll take some getting used to. Everybody got a chance to shine here. Cedric Alexander is going to be wrestling for the Universal title one day. Mark my words. I don't know if he'll win it, but that guy can go much higher than just the Cruiserweight division. The Cruiserweight division, it's great for him right now. It gets him on Raw. There's no way Cedric Alexander would be on Raw today this quickly if it wasn't for the whole Cruiserweight division. So for him, it's great. But believe me, he's going to end up in a much bigger position. He'll be a much bigger star than that. Brian Kendrick got the win with the bully choke on Alexander, which they're now calling Captain's Hook, I guess, because aside from the choke slam, they don't want to use the word choke. I don't know. I don't know why else you would change it. Kendrick winning makes sense. It makes sense for this reason. He's not winning the title tonight. TJ Perkins, he needs somebody he can beat. I would rather he beat Kendrick on night one, you know, his first defense, than beat somebody like Cedric or Rich Swann. And also, you know, they're telling a good story with Kendrick. Now, of course, they're not telling it on TV because why should they? All the good stuff they save for YouTube. He did a great sit-down interview with Michael Cole that really, I thought, did a good job of explaining who he is, why this match is so important to him. You know, he used to be in WWE. He got released. He's 7 years later, he's back, and he wants to rejuvenate his career, and he'll do anything to get it done. And he's offended. He got pissed off, like, the last 60 seconds of the sit-down with Cole, because his demeanor was fine the whole time, and Even Cole was like, you know, you and I used to be really good friends. We used to ride together when you were in WWE. So they established that him and Cole had a relationship. But then, like, the last minute, he gets all offended. He's offended by everybody making such a big deal about the fact that TJ Perkins, his whole story, he was homeless, living in his car. He's like, I was homeless too, so we're half the guys on the roster. Big deal. He's no more special than any of us. It's a really good interview. It's a really good interview. You guys should all go watch it. I want to see this division succeed. I want to see everybody in the division succeed. In the future, get these guys in the ring in hour one. You could always bring out two more guys for another match later in the show. You know, you're allowed to have more than one cruiserweight match on the show. It's not like you have a quota, okay, or some kind of number that you can't go beyond. But I say get them out there in hour one. But I also think leaving the champion who was there off the show was incredibly dumb. Roman Reigns beat Kevin Owens in a non-title steel cage match by climbing out of the cage first. Look, at least he didn't pin the guy. That's about all I can say about this. Rusev ran down with a chain to lock himself inside with Reigns. Owens was in there with him as well. They were working over Roman Reigns, and it was funny because at one point Owens was like yelling to Rusev, and he was like, "Go, Machka something." So they're beating down on Reigns, and Seth Rollins comes running down to the ring. He ascends to the top of the cage, and he jumps off for a crossbody block. He wipes out all the heels. He comes to the aid of his former Shield brother. Why? Because he's a babyface, I guess. That's what babyfaces do. Otherwise, I don't have a good explanation for why a guy who recovered from a catastrophic knee injury would voluntarily climb to the top of a cage and jump off 6 days before he challenges for the championship. The only explanation is he's a babyface. That's what babyfaces do. So here's the deal with Raw. Raw is getting crushed tomorrow night with Monday Night Football and the first presidential debate, which legitimately is going to be one of the most watched events of any kind in television history. I'll make a prediction right now and say that the debate tops out around, give or take, around 90 million. 90 million viewers is my prediction. I would go over 100, but it's up against Monday Night Football. Yeah, you know football is going to take at least a small chunk out of it. So I'll stick with 90 million is my prediction. I say they ought to sell ad time for it like they do the Super Bowl, but apparently this thing is airing commercial free. Remember that one time Raw aired commercial free? Do you remember who ran the show that night? Donald Trump. How about that? I know what I'm watching, and it's not Raw. I will be tuned in for the debate. I wish I could be there. That where the debate is being held, that's my alma mater. I was able to get on campus. They had the presidential debate there 8 years ago. That was the one with Obama and McCain. And I went to the campus. Now, I didn't actually get into the debate hall because that's a whole special lottery and everything. But they were showing it on a big screen with like an audience in one of the other buildings. So it was interesting to watch that debate with a crowd, with a live crowd. It was total insanity on campus. They had all the cable shows were broadcasting live under tents. Like outside my old dorm tower, there was like a tent with an MSNBC show going on. And, you know, right, like, I don't know how many feet down, there was like another tent with Fox News broadcasting. It was all the protesters. It was insanity. And I have no doubt. I mean, if it was insanity 8 years ago, imagine how insane it's going to be for this clown show. Can you imagine what that campus is going to be like? I was already told the entire campus has basically been on lockdown since Friday. I think they even canceled classes for tomorrow. I don't think there are any classes. So the big news, I guess, here is, without getting too much into the politics of everything, Hillary's campaign has invited Mark Cuban as their guest to sit in the front row. So Donald Trump turned around, and in a most Trumpian move, he invited Jennifer Flowers as his guest to sit in the front row. Flowers is the woman who had an affair, one of many, I'm sure, with Bill Clinton before he was president. Ironically, Mark Cuban and Jennifer Flowers have both appeared on WWE pay-per-views before. Since I can tie this into wrestling here, they both appeared on WWE pay-per-views. Flowers, she did that sit-down interview with The Rock that taped interview, and then she was out there, I think, with Jeff Jarrett at WrestleMania 14, and Cuban was once RKO'd by Randy Orton. And obviously Trump, you know, Trump's been to a few WrestleManias, even hosted two of them. This thing is going to be a giant shit show, and, you know, I joke about how entertaining it all is, and it is, but it's also really sad, right? I mean, to the point of embarrassment. It is embarrassing that an election to decide the next president of the United States, arguably the most powerful person in the world, has degenerated into what it has. There is no winner here. Regardless of who wins this election, this has been an absolute national embarrassment. And that's it. I'm off my soapbox now. Clash of Champions. Clash of Champions is tonight from Indianapolis. I'll run through my predictions here real quick. Nia Jax and Alicia Fox is the kickoff match. Nia Jax is going to win. I mean, I think that's a pretty safe assumption to make. Cesaro and Sheamus match 7 in their best of 7 series. I sure hope Cesaro is supposed to win this thing. Unless they're doing the draw finish that one of our listeners wrote in about, and then they're going to get a tag title shot. But my pick is Cesaro. Sami Zayn and Chris Jericho. I'm going to go with Chris Jericho. I think he gets the win. TJ Perkins and Brian Kendrick for the Cruiserweight title. It's got to be Perkins. I mean, for God's sakes, this is the guy's first appearance. If he loses the championship at his first defense, I just don't know what to say. So Perkins is my pick. The New Day against Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson for the Tag Team Championship. I'm going with New Day. I'm going with New Day. I mean, I mean, Gallows and Anderson, I'm just over it. I'm just done. This is what they've done to these two guys. And I also was told that apparently tomorrow night, if the New Day makes it to Monday night, that will be 400 days of their tag team title reign. I would be kind of surprised if they killed it on day 399. So I'm going with New Day. I think New Day retains. At this point, they'll probably retire with those titles. They'll probably be buried and lowered in their casket 6 feet under with those titles. Charlotte, Sasha Banks, and Bayley. Triple threat for the women's championship. I'm going to go with Charlotte. I'm going to go with Charlotte. Probably will probably get the pinfall over Bayley, but Charlotte is my pick to retain. Roman Reigns and Rusev for the United States Championship. I just don't see Reigns getting that U.S. title. I think it's going to be some kind of a DQ finish. I think I'm picking Rusev to win. I could see Reigns doing something, you know, putting him to the table or something that gets him DQ'd. Reigns will look strong coming out of this. He'll be just fine, but I think Rusev is holding on to that championship, so he's my pick there. And then we have the main event, Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship. I think Triple H will make an appearance. I hope Triple H will make an appearance. It's been long enough. I don't think Kevin Owens is losing the championship so quickly. For his sake, I sure hope he doesn't. Kevin Owens will retain the Universal title, and then whatever issue is there between Rollins and Triple H will continue. I'm sure it's leading to a match. I don't know if they can hold off until WrestleMania for that match. Otherwise, I would expect them to have a match at Survivor Series. We'll see what happens there. But Kevin Owens is my pick. And that's the Clash of Champions tonight from Indianapolis. Now, SmackDown. SmackDown Live. Couple of notes on this. They had a contract signing on this show for the women's title match at No Mercy. It feels like there's a fucking pay-per-view every weekend. Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss is going to be that match at No Mercy. They were in the ring. Daniel Bryan was moderating. It was a contract signing. Not much else to say. Alexa Bliss, I say, has some of the best facial expressions in all of wrestling. William Regal would be very proud. She is fantastic. She ended up throwing the contract in Becky's face after she signed it. She overturned the table on top of her, and then she left. Becky ran after her, but Alexa bailed. I gotta say, right now, I'm more into the women's stuff on SmackDown than I am on Raw. And they've got different stories, too. I mean, you've got Becky and Alexa now going for the championship. You've got whatever the issue is between Carmella and Nikki Bella. So they've got some... And Naomi has one of the best entrances in the entire company. So they got some good stuff going on there right now. And on Raw, you've got Charlotte, Sasha, and Bayley. I guess you've got whatever story is brewing with Charlotte and Dana. I'm not really into it. And then you've got Nia now feuding with Alicia. So you've got some stories there too, but I'm just more into what's going on the SmackDown side. I liked the match between the Usos and American Alpha. Gable sold the hell out of his knee. Man, this guy is good. Newsflash, Chad Gable is really good. I love the little touch later in the match where Jordan is just in desperate need for a tag, but he sees that Gable's knee is bothering him, and he's like waving him off. He's like, no, I can't tag you. I got this. So, of course, he ends up getting pinned. Just, classic old-school tag team wrestling. So the Usos now will get the next title shot against Slater and Rhino at No Mercy. They're definitely building to a match between Baron Corbin and Jack Swagger. Swagger did commentary for Corbin's match, which was basically a squash with Apollo Crews. Now, Apollo Crews no longer smiles, which actually kind of makes sense. The guy keeps getting squashed. I wouldn't smile either. But they dropped the smiling. He's got a serious look on his face when he comes to the ring. That's good. That's a good thing. Unfortunately, he's also losing most of his matches now. He lost here. So I am very happy that he has ditched the smile, but the way he's being booked as an afterthought on this show. I'm not really sure what's going on there. Dolph Ziggler and The Miz for the Intercontinental title. I really like the finish of this match. I thought the match itself was fine. It was good. But I really like the finish. I thought it was very clever. We've seen Maryse mace Ziggler in the eyes before. She went to do it again here, but the referee caught her before she could use it. So the referee tossed her out. He's like, you're out of here. And before she leaves, very subtly, she drops the mace. Now, I know it's not supposed to be mace. It's supposed to be, hairspray or whatever. But to me, it's funnier if we imagine that it's a can of mace or pepper spray or whatever. So she drops the pepper spray on the floor. It's one of those subtle things where I think if you weren't really paying attention closely, you wouldn't have even noticed. Okay, she drops something on the floor. Big deal. So she drops it on the ground. She leaves. Ziggler, meanwhile, because Miz is distracted by all this, Ziggler sneaks up from behind, hits a zigzag, which is his finisher. That got the fans into the finish. The fans bought that as a finish, so when Miz kicked out, it got a this is awesome chant. The people were totally into this. Miz tried to leave. He grabbed his title. He's like, I'm out of here. Ziggler knocked him into the ring steps outside. Now, the key here is that when he does this, the camera cuts away. They show Ziggler standing outside. They quickly then cut back to Miz on the ground. In that time, Miz grabbed the can of mace on the ground, but we didn't see it. So he's got the mace in one hand concealed. He's got the title belt in the other hand. Ziggler rolls him into the ring. Now, when he does that, Miz tosses the belt out of his hand like halfway across the ring. So the referee goes to pick up the title. When he does that, Miz maces Ziggler in the face. Just right in the face, sprays him right in the eyes, and then finishes him off with the skull-crushing finale. So Dolph Ziggler loses another one, but at this point, who the hell even cares? I thought this was a really clever finish. I liked it a lot. We then had John Cena against Dean Ambrose in the main event. The match itself, honestly, was really nothing special except for the finish. Dean Ambrose pinned John Cena clean in the middle with a roll-up. John Cena lost clean to a roll-up. And to me, it is so weird seeing John Cena lose to a roll-up when on those rare times that he does lose clean, you've got to shoot him, stab him, set him on fire, and hit your finisher five times just to get that done. But it was still nice to see. It was just very weird to see a simple roll-up beat this man. It makes me wonder why he's even in that championship match at No Mercy in the first place. I mean, he's now lost clean to Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles. Other than the fact that he's John Cena, he doesn't belong in that match. Why is he getting a title shot? What's he done? Ambrose is getting his one-on-one rematch for the title on SmackDown this week against Styles. Speaking of Ambrose, he popped up on Talking Smack after the show was over, and he cut a tremendous promo on John Cena. He said he stands by what he said before about him being a lazy part-timer. He says he and Cena have never liked each other. If they would be in the back, Cena wouldn't even look at him. He would just keep walking right past him. He called him out. He said, hey, come find me backstage. I'm not afraid. Cena has no friends. I've got the Samoans and Swagger by my side. Which is one of the weirder stables that I've ever heard of, I have to say. That is a weird faction. He said he doesn't care about John Cena's opinion, nor does he care about Steve Austin's opinion. He sometimes doesn't even care what Renee thinks, and Renee was not happy about that. He said he's main evented four nights in a row for the company this week. If they need to fly him to go work a match somewhere in this town or that town, he goes and does it. He does all the appearances and the signings and stuff. He said he's like the mechanic around here. If something needs fixing, they call Dean Ambrose. So, if Rollins is the architect, and Ambrose is the mechanic, what does that make Roman Reigns? The electrician? Carpenter? I'm not quite sure. Maybe you guys can come up with something. But anyway, this was good stuff. Talking Smack, still one of the best shows on not just the network, one of the best shows they have, period. It might have even surpassed NXT. So you should hop on the network and check that out.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Before we get to NXT, I was just checking my messages and got a pretty terrible email just now. I'm just reading up on the death of Jose Fernandez, which is unbelievable. I can't even believe this. I was talking about the Mets earlier, and he was probably the ace for the Florida Marlins, young kid, 24 years old. He passed away overnight in a boating accident. So I don't know what happened there. Him and a couple of other people, I think, are dead. I think he was actually supposed to pitch against the Mets tomorrow. I think his start got pushed back, and I know the Mets are supposed to play the Marlins on Monday night, and I think we were going to be up against him, and that was not something that we as Mets fans were looking forward to, because this guy is, he was unstoppable. Probably, again, the best pitcher on that Marlins staff, and a young kid too, only like 24, I think it said he was. Unbelievable. That is terrible. That is absolutely terrible news. I think the Marlins game against the Braves today has been canceled. I'm just reading up on this literally right now. I'm just finding out about this. So that's very, very sad. I'm very, very sorry to hear that. Oh, boy. So back to wrestling mode here. NXT opened with Samoa Joe in the ring. He was reading a copy of Shinsuke Nakamura's medical report to us. So I think somebody ought to brief Joe about the HIPAA laws we have in this country. He mentioned contusions and such. It's funny, you know, when I hear contusions, that's like WWE's go-to injury. They always mention contusions. Like Steve Austin dropped Triple H from 50 feet up in a car, and they told us he suffered multiple contusions. It's like they got to get that in there. They got to get those contusions in there. Nakamura also suffered shoulder and clavicle injuries last week when Joe gave him a uranage on the ring steps, and he's told that Nakamura will be out 6 to 12 weeks. He demanded that William Regal come out and strip Nakamura of the title and give it back to him, which of course Regal did not do. Instead, Joe threatened to kill the entire roster, and then he promptly disappeared, never to be seen again for the rest of the show. So NXT doesn't have much of a roster left. It's decimated enough, so if I were Regal, I would consider giving the man what he wants. So he can't really threaten to fire Joe, because then he could just go to Raw or SmackDown. I'm thinking maybe he can like threaten to send him to the third hour of Raw only, right? That might actually scare the shit out of Joe. Scare the shit out of me. Cedric Alexander showed up backstage for a promo. Some of the cruiserweights will be splitting time, apparently, between Raw and NXT. He said he went to Regal. He wanted Regal to give him the very best that NXT had to offer. And so tonight he has been given a match with Andrade Cien Almas. Austin Aries beat Oney Lorcan with the Last Chancery. He called out Hideo Itami after the match. And when Itami came out, Aries bailed. We got a video package for Dan Matha. I think his name is pronounced. He's coming to NXT in 2 weeks. All I know is he's big and he's jacked and he played football. That's about all I know about this guy. Can he wrestle? Well, I guess we'll see. Huh? That's what NXT is supposed to be for. Billy Kay beat Aaliyah with a kick to the face. Man, now that Bayley is gone, this women's division is just on life support. I mean, I know they're rebuilding. They're in a rebuilding mode right now with NXT. But man, this is just, it's almost depressing to see how just lifeless this division is right now. Case in point, after this, we got a Mandy Rose promo. Now, you may remember Mandy as the She was the busty blonde from Tough Enough. She may have even been on Total Divas. I'm not really sure. I vaguely remember her some commercial. Maybe she was in a car. I think it was a commercial for Total Divas. Anyway, she cut a promo on Ember Moon. Now, did I miss something here? I mean, was this not her first appearance? It was just sort of thrown out there. It almost sounded like they had a feud going for weeks that I must have completely missed. It just kind of came out of the blue. So that was weird. Next week, Asuka destroys Liv Morgan. So that should be fun, although we'll be one less woman in the women's division. And in the main event, Cedric Alexander and Andrade Cien Almas. Cedric won with the lumbar check. This was a good match, but it felt like a total showcase for Cedric. It almost like they've given up on Almas. And judging by that interview that Del Rio gave, it sounds like he may be about ready to give up on them too. You know, I'm not counting the guy out just yet. I think he's very talented. I know he's done a lot of, you know, had a lot of incredible matches outside of WWE. There's still time to turn things around, but aside from being a good wrestler, he's not bringing anything to the table right now. And the fans are just apathetic. You know, when he comes out, there's practically no reaction. There might even be some boos. Now, as the match went on, they got into him, so that's a good sign. But, you know, Sami Callihan went through a couple of gimmick tweaks before he finally parted ways with the company, and, you know, maybe they'll try the same thing with Almas, and maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't, but there's no life there. There's no energy there. He's a good wrestler, and that's it. And there's got to be more to it than that. Lucha Underground. Chavo Guerrero is back. You know, he's part of that big lawsuit against WWE. Maybe he shouldn't be wrestling around these parts here if his brains are that scrambled. He interrupted a training session with Rey Mysterio in Dragon Azteca. Dario's Dial of Doom was back. The big wheel landed on the Mac this week as Matanza's next challenger for the Lucha Underground title. Wrath of the God Slam finished off the Mac after a relatively short match. We then got a weird segment with Son of Havoc, the same Son of Havoc who challenged Matanza for the Lucha Underground title a few weeks ago, the same Son of Havoc who is one of the most over, most popular stars in all of Lucha Underground, sitting in his mother's basement watching television with Masquerita Sagrada. Why Masquerita Sagrada was with him, I have no idea, but there he was. They were watching TV, an ad for Famous B came on, and Masquerita flipped off the TV. That was funny. Havoc's mother popped her head in and showed off some pizza bites that I guess she was making for them. I guess this was supposed to be product placement. I guess. I have no idea. This was fucking weird is what this was. Johnny Mundo marched into Dario Cueto's office while Dario was in the middle of a coke hit. He demands a Lucha Underground title shot. Dario offered him a rematch instead for the Trios titles, and Mundo was not happy. He turned it down. He said, "I'll be at my dojo. If you want to know where I'm going to be." So he leaves. Taya stays, and Taya says, "Well, I'm down for a Trios title match." So she ended up taking Mundo's place, I should say, in the match later on. Tejano, and they call him Cage, in an ultimate opportunity match. Oh man, do we have to talk about Cage? They call him Moron, should be his new name. There was some dirty laundry aired on Instagram this week involving Cage and the Lucha Underground ring announcer Melissa Santos. There was some drama. Now, from what I can gather, the two of them had been dating for a while, and Cage must have tagged her in a photo on Instagram, and Melissa responded from her official account with this. This is what she wrote. This was public. This was not a private message that got leaked. This was put out there for the world to see, so I'm going to read it. She said, "Don't woman crush me anymore." And by the way, I thought she was talking about some sex position that he used on her before I realized she was probably just talking about Woman Crush Wednesday or whatever the hell it's called. It's like every time I see hashtag WCW on Twitter every Wednesday, I have to remind myself that it doesn't mean what I think it means. So anyway, "Don't woman crush me anymore. You and I are over," with 4 exclamation points. You know a woman is pissed when she uses 4 of them. "Next time you talk about me, make sure you tell people how you cheated on me with your ex-wife the whole time. Thanks for breaking my heart." Well, damn. Cage must really be a machine, because no male homo sapien with a functioning brain would cheat on Melissa Santos. What the hell was this guy thinking? Well, he realized his mistake pretty quick, because he's now posting comments on her photos, trying to apologize. He said, I love you. I made the world's biggest mistake. Ain't that the fucking truth? And I made the mistake to no one's benefit, and now I'm hurting so much, and I only want to take your pain away. So he's a songwriter now. I can't be the only one dying to know what this ex-wife looks like. I'm just dying to see a picture. Man, this sounds like an episode of Love and Hip Hop. Cage beat Tejano with the discus lariat. I thought they had a fun match. Dario came back out. He said, not so fast, because he had come out before and he said, whoever wins this match wins an ultimate opportunity. So now he comes out and he says, well, you can win the ultimate opportunity provided you win two more matches, because it's now a best of five series. So that was match one. See, I think they should make it where the winner gets a date with Melissa Santos and have Cage win. See, now that would make for some very awkward television. Backstage, Dario's going through some stuff on his desk. He comes across some photos. I couldn't tell what the photos were. I couldn't make them out. He throws them in the garbage. Dragon Azteca marches in. He demands a match with Pentagon Dark, which Dario pencils in for next week's show, so he leaves. Then some guy named Ricky walks in. He wants to know when his next match is going to be. It's been a while. It must be, because I have no idea who this guy was. So maybe somebody can enlighten me. So he notices some cool pictures on Dario's desk, which Dario looks down and he sees the same photos that he had just deposited into the waste paper basket. He has no idea how they magically reappeared on his desk. And he's kind of freaked out by the whole thing. And so he says, hey, Ricky, you like him? Here, you can have him. And he gives him the photos. So he leaves. Chavo then walks in. This guy's got to put a fucking lock on his door is what he has to do. Chavo walks in. He tells Dario they have to talk. And Dario looks about as pleased to see him as we all do when we see him show up on TV. So the main event was for the Trios Tag Team titles. Phoenix, Drago, and Aerostar, the Super Friends, defending against Taya, Jack Evans, and PJ Black. Evans, for some reason, acted like a spoiled brat the entire match. He would not tag in Taya when she wanted the tag. Later on, he and PJ got into it. Then he left the ring. He sat Indian style on the floor like a child throwing a temper tantrum. I'm not quite sure what this was all about. The Super Friends won. They retained their titles. But Mundo, who I thought was supposed to be at his dojo, I guess not, he ran down, turned into an attack on all the baby faces. Sexy Star ran down to even out the odds. And the final segment of the show was, what else? Another meeting in Dario Cueto's office. Dario was meeting with Rey Mysterio Jr. He told Rey that Dragon Azteca, his protege, had come into him earlier and demanded a match with Pentagon, and he penciled it in. And Rey just shook his head. He asked him to erase it. And Dario said, well, I have, but instead it's going to be Dragon Azteca against Chavo, with the winner getting a grudge match with Pentagon. And he said, look, Rey, I know you're in a tough spot. I know Chavo, you know him better than anybody else, and you don't want Dragon Azteca in a match with him, but I also don't want him in the ring, you know, or you don't want him in the ring. I don't want him in the ring. Nobody wants him in the ring with a bone-breaking psychopath. So here's what I'll do. To make things fair, I'm going to make you the guest referee in that match next week. And they went off the air. So, you know, a fine show. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing terribly memorable about it. Not one of the best Lucha Underground episodes or anything like that. But they set up a few stories going forward. And here's the thing I actually really liked about it. I could see some people are turned off by this, but what I liked about it was a very Dario-heavy show. We have weeks where Dario doesn't even appear. We have weeks where he shows up once. And then we have weeks like this, where he shows up in every other segment. And those are the shows that I tend to like. You know, it's funny, I can't stand the authority figure segments on Raw and SmackDown. I just can't. I mean, less so on SmackDown. I don't mind, you know, Daniel Bryan too much. But Dario Cueto, he's so freaking great in that role. I feel like we don't get enough of him. So when we get a bunch of Dario Cueto segments where that would turn me off if it was Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon in every other segment, I don't mind it at all, because I just think he's such a great television character. He's still my favorite character of any kind on any wrestling show. He's number one in my book. So with that, let's get to your questions in the mailbag. Got a lot of good ones this week. You can email me, of course, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Billy, by the way, I wanted to mention this first. Billy asked me on Twitter as a follow-up to my answer last week. Someone wanted to know, how would I make Survivor Series great again? I said, well, do Raw versus SmackDown, 5-on-5 War Games match, and you could even up the ante by having the winning brand get the main event of WrestleMania. So Billy tweeted me, he wanted to know what my teams would be. He wanted me to go a little bit deeper into it and break it down. So this is what I floated to him on Twitter. I mean, this is what I came up with very quickly. I floated Owens, Rollins, Reigns, Jericho, and Braun Strowman. Because the big guy's getting groomed for something. Okay, whether you like it or not, this guy's getting a push. And, you know, you need an enforcer in there for your team. He can be that enforcer. So that would be the Raw team against AJ Styles, John Cena, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, and Baron Corbin. Corbin can kind of be their enforcer. So that would be the War Games match. And then to flesh out the cards, you could do Lesnar against Cesaro, assuming Cesaro wins his best of seven series. That gives him some, you know, a little bit of momentum. You could flesh out the card with a couple of tag team title matches, a couple of women's title matches, and then you make the cruiserweights. You put them in a Survivor Series elimination match. You could do a 4-on-4 or a 5-on-5 elimination with the cruiserweights and let them do their thing. And there you go. There's your Survivor Series card. This comes from the Inconsolable One, if that is your real name. I saw this on Reddit a few days ago. Someone linked to the Global Force Wrestling roster on their website, and a good number of guys have since been signed by WWE. Are they officially dead? What is the deal with Global Force Wrestling? Well, hey, you know, Jeff Jarrett is still waiting on that TV deal to come through. He may be waiting a while. Either that or it's the Great Gold Rush. He's a little busy right now. Of course it's dead. Let's be honest here. It's dead. Okay, it was dead before it even started. I looked at their roster before I started recording. I wanted to see what this person was talking about. By my own count, there are 7 people on that roster who have since been signed by WWE. Possibly 9, if you include the Bollywood Boys. I know the Bollywood Boys, they wrestled on that last set of NXT tapings. I know they were in the Cruiserweight Classic. I don't know if they've officially been signed or not, so they may not be. I'll leave them out for now. So that gives us 7 people. 7 people out of 52 on the GFW roster. It's not a majority, but, you know, still, I mean, the fact that they haven't even updated their roster in so long, I think should tell you something. They've still got Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa on there. I mean, Gallows and Anderson. These guys have been under contract to WWE since probably, what, February, March? Gallows and Anderson, I think, have been signed since then. So, you know, TJ Perkins is on there. I wouldn't waste my time, honestly, worrying too much about Global Force Wrestling. If they ever have something to announce, they'll announce it. But if you're going to wait around expecting an announcement, you're going to be waiting an awful long time because I don't see that announcement coming. If there was going to be one, we would have gotten it by now. Angel wants to know, do you think the Dusty Rhodes Classic would have been or would have benefited from being a CWC-style tournament, different promotions aside, with the Young Bucks, the Wolves, New Day Usos, Gargano, Ciampa, and others? Well, I mean, look, you can't just say different promotions aside. That's exactly why they can't do one. That's the whole reason they can't do one, right? The Young Bucks are signed to Ring of Honor. And they also wrestle for New Japan. The Wolves are signed to TNA. That leaves the New Day, the Usos, and Gargano and Ciampa, and the ones that you named. And all of them are under contract to WWE. Now, you left out the Briscoes, and they're under contract to ROH. You can't use guys that are under contract to ROH or TNA. You just can't. And actually, the closest thing to something that you just described is the G1 Tag League that New Japan does every year. They have their own tag team tournament. I think the next one starts up in November. So if that's something you're interested in, you could probably sign up for New Japan World and just watch it that way. That would be my recommendation. Let's see here. Aaron from El Paso, Texas. Regarding Shinsuke Nakamura, would you have him debut on the SmackDown brand after Survivor Series to challenge Miz for the Intercontinental title, or have him debut at the Royal Rumble and win? See, now that's a hell of an idea. That is a hell of a debut at the Rumble and win. So that would mean, if we're putting him on the SmackDown brand, That would mean Nakamura against AJ Styles for the championship, possibly at WrestleMania. See, you can sign me up for that. I said that a few weeks ago. These guys had an incredible match at the Tokyo Dome in January. I don't see any reason why they can't have that kind of a match at WrestleMania and tear the house down. And look, don't think it's so far-fetched either that this scenario here could happen. I mean, look at Finn Balor. I'll use him as Exhibit A. They brought him up. His first pay-per-view match, he wins the championship. They put him over Seth Rollins. That's a big deal. He'd be the champion right now had he not gotten hurt. So I could see them doing the same thing with Nakamura. He'd fit right in, too. He'd get the big WrestleMania entrance with the violinists. They'd have a whole fucking orchestra out there playing him to the ring. Those two guys would tear the house down. The only thing is, I still feel like it's going to be John Cena getting his 16th title. I can't shake that feeling. I mean, really, the only two guys I see right now, we can't talk about trades. Anything can happen. They could have trades between Raw and SmackDown between now and then. Let's assume they don't. Really, the only two guys I see being in that match, let's say if Styles is still the champion going into WrestleMania, it's either John Cena or Randy Orton. I could see them setting up, you know, for the big spot at WrestleMania with Orton catching Styles with an RKO when he springboards off the ropes for the forearm. You know they're going to do that at some point. You know it's coming. But I think it's either Cena or Orton. But, you know, if they wanted to put Cena in there against Undertaker, you know, instead of doing then the Orton match, they could have Nakamura win the Royal Rumble. And, yeah, he could challenge AJ for the championship at WrestleMania. I'd be fine with that. Hey, to me, that's one hell of a main event right there. I don't think they would be going on last. I think it'd be one of these main event, non-main event deals. But it would still be one hell of a match. And I would caution anyone who doesn't think it's possible to look at what they did with Balor. If SmackDown needs a new star and they're that determined to get somebody over, it could very easily be Nakamura who they strap the rocket to and they send him off into the atmosphere. I mean, even more than Joe. I don't see them doing that with Samoa Joe. I do think Joe will make his way up at some point, but I don't see them strapping the rocket to Joe and launching him right into the WrestleMania main event. I don't see them getting behind Joe like that, but Nakamura, I think they would. Jason from Iowa. Let's say, hypothetically, WWE was to fold. Do you think the territories could make a comeback, or is that whole concept antiquated and could never work in this modern age of technology? It wouldn't work. You have plenty of indie promotions who work together, but I mean, in terms of like running a territory, those days are gone. I mean, they're over. The closest thing to this that I pitched once on the show, and it may have been episode 127, whatever that show was. I think that was the show where I mapped out my whole WWE business plan. It may have been on there. I pitched an idea for WWE to run different developmental territory. So instead of just having a system in Florida, have a handful of them spread out all over. So you have the operation in Florida, you have one on the West Coast out in California, have, you know, Lance Storm run one up in Canada. He's already had a bunch of people graduate from his school who get signed by WWE. And Canada has always been a breeding ground, I mean, it feels like, for pro wrestlers. I'm kind of surprised that they don't already have something up there. Maybe even set one up in the UK. And I said this before this UK wrestling boom even hit. This was years ago. You know, you've got a ton of guys over there. So what intrigued me was the idea of having, let's say, 3 to 4 so-called territories where talent could rotate to gain experience and make a name for themselves. So it's like in the old territory days, a guy could work, let's say, the Florida territory, and when he started to maybe get a little stale, or even before he got to that point, before he started to get stale, that territory might make a deal to send him to, you know, the Pacific Northwest territory. And a big star from there might then go down and work Florida for 6 months. Now they're wrestling in front of a totally different audience with all new opponents. And back then, you know, you couldn't go on the internet and find out what this guy had been doing for the last 6 months. And, oh, this guy's been jobbing out for the last 6 months. You could have been jobbing out for the last 6 months out west, go out east, and all of a sudden you're some big hotshot, you know, because you didn't have the internet and social media and all that kind of stuff. So you didn't really know what was going on. I mean, your only real exposure to what was going on was through the magazines. You know, go listen to the interviews I did with Bill Apter and with George Napolitano if you want to find out how important the magazines were back then. But the idea of taking this NXT talent, and when I pitched this idea, you gotta remember, this was before NXT was even a thing, okay? They were still in the FCW days, I think, when I first pitched this idea, which is why this probably wouldn't work now the way that they have the system set up. But I liked the idea back then of them not kind of, you're not learning just one style from the same coaches or the same people. You rotate them out to different places and they could learn and pick up things from different people and they can work with other people. So it's not exactly the same thing as a guy who's kind of foregoes WWE because he wants to travel the world. Zack Sabre Jr., he didn't sign a contract. Why? Because he said he has more to accomplish working around the world. So you might go to the UK, you might go to Japan, you might go to Mexico. You can work all over the U.S. It's not the same as working all over the world, but at least you're still working different places, right? If you rotate between two, three, four different places, or Canada and the U.K. But, I mean, if WWE went away, there's no company that I see that would be able to have a system like that. And what I just pitched really is the closest thing you're going to get, I think, to a territory-like system. And with NXT being what it is now, I don't even know if you can do that. I mean, there are promotions who cooperate with one another, but most of them, they compete. I mean, they compete against each other. A lot of them are looking to get national TV, or they're on, you know, the Fight TV app, or this app, or that app, so people all over the world can see their product. That's not a territory system. You can't, you know, you just can't replicate exactly how it used to be. It just doesn't work anymore. Henny from the UK. Were there ever any plans to put the WWF title on Chris Benoit in 2000? He gained a victory over The Rock at Fully Loaded and pinned The Undertaker in a fatal four-way at Unforgiven. On both occasions, the result was voided. The match was restarted and The Rock retained the title. After Unforgiven, Benoit and Kurt Angle switched rivals. Kurt won the belt from The Rock, and Benoit feuded with Triple H before dropping to mid-card status. Was this always the plan? I don't know. I think it was. You know, that the year Kurt was having, the only thing left for him really to do was to win the championship, so I think it probably was the plan all along. I mean, that, and if they had already done the Benoit Rock match in July, I just can't see them going back to it as a pay-per-view main event in October. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I would think that was the plan, but who knows? You know, the Triple H Kurt Angle Stephanie Love Triangle deal was just dropped way too quickly. One match, that's it. You know, one and done. Triple H beat him, and that was it. Who knows? Maybe it was supposed to go longer and Triple H didn't want it to. You know, I would understand it if he wanted to cut it short. He's a smart guy. He's smart enough, I think, to know where that could have ended up. But I think the whole thing with Kurt winning the title and essentially switching roles or switching rivals with Benoit was probably the whole, you know, the plan the whole time. Kaylin from London, England. I wanted to get your opinion on the two times the WWE tried to turn Jim Ross heel, once in 1996 when he cut that promo and brought out the fake Razor Ramon, and the other time in 1999 when he had Dr. Death, Steve Williams, as his bodyguard, brought out his own commentary table, kicked Michael Cole in the nuts, and slapped Bart Gunn. I hated that night when he brought out the fake Razor. I still remember that. I still remember, I guess it was the week before, maybe. It was, yeah, you know, Raw was taped most weeks back then, and they kind of edited in this update that, you know, you can call, I think it might have been one of the hotline updates. Call the hotline and find out, you know, Razor and Diesel are on their way back. And it's like, it caused this whole stir. And I remember hearing, like, Hall and Nash, they might have been at home or they heard about it. They're like, oh, really? Nobody told us. So it created a stir. It created interest, which is what they wanted. And then, of course, it comes to that night and out comes fucking Rick Bogner dressed up as Razor Ramon. And like a week or two later, we got fucking Kane, you know, fucking Isaac Yankem out there as Diesel. I mean, the whole thing, as a fan, it just pissed me off. You know what I mean? It was stupid. The whole thing was dumb. It was a great little work shoot by JR. I liked the promo. I wish guys today showed as much fire in their promos as he did in that one. But, I mean, the Razor reveal, it was just so lame. And the thing is, it made them feel so Bush League, you know, that they promised the real thing and they gave us that. Meanwhile, WCW did have the real thing, right? They were putting the actual Kevin Nash and Scott Hall out there on TV every single week. So I think in the end, it just made WWF look Bush League. It didn't do them any favors. Didn't do those guys any favors either, because after a few months, they were gone. It's like, you know, I think to myself, like, no wonder they were getting their asses kicked in the ratings back then. But I did enjoy, you know, for the few months it lasted, JR was blasting Vince McMahon on commentary every chance he got. They did a good job, I think, of making the tension between them feel real. I remember that one pay-per-view where JR's microphone kept going out on him as he was ranting, and he kept blaming Vince, and of course Vince, you know, he denied having anything to do with it, but you know he did. The sneaky SOB. The only thing I liked about the one in 99, that was when JR had been out a few months. He had Bell's palsy for the second time. And so they put him back on TV. His face was, his face was still very much messed up. I don't know that he sounded fine. So I shouldn't say that he shouldn't have been on TV, because now I sound like Vince McMahon. But you could still tell he was suffering the effects of the paralysis in his face. And, you know, I didn't like it because it's like they turned him into this very, like, bitter, angry, not a comedy figure. I wouldn't use the word comedy, but they turned him into, like, a caricature of himself. That's what I didn't like about it. But the one thing that I thought was funny was the time on Raw, he was at ringside. He had a little makeshift commentary table. He's like, well, if they're not going to let me back on commentary, I'll just bring my own table out there. So he's got his table is like in front of the actual announce table. He's like right by the apron. And I don't remember who Hardcore Holly was wrestling. It was Bob Holly, and he got backdropped out of the ring. He landed on this little makeshift desk that JR had set up for himself. And Bob almost killed himself on that bump. I mean, he didn't even really land on the table. His legs kind of did, but he fell like between the apron and the table, like right on the back of his head. He looked like he killed himself. But JR wasn't so concerned about his condition. He was more enraged that Holly had just wrecked his table. He couldn't care less about what happened to this guy, if he was dead or alive. Only that he wrecked his table. I thought that was funny. But I just didn't like it because it turned this guy into a joke. And this is when Jim Ross was still the number one play-by-play announcer in all of wrestling. He had been out, you know, a few months, but, you know, Michael Cole had taken his spot. Sound familiar? But he was still the number one guy. And here they are, you know, Russo or whoever's idea it was, Vince obviously approved it. Here they are making a mockery of this man. Now, if JR was leaving commentary altogether to go be a manager for Dr. Death, that'd be a different story. I think JR as the heel manager for Dr. Death could have worked. But that wasn't the plan. And then a few weeks later, they dropped the whole thing, and JR was back on commentary as the play-by-play guy. So you tell me, you know, what purpose did it serve? It really didn't serve much of one. Danny has some questions about our intro to the podcast. He says, I've been a listener for about a year now. If you have time, I would love it if you could talk about the sound bites during the podcast intro. I think I recognize some of the voices, but I only know the context behind the Daniel Bryan one where he says, your title belt is made of leather. I know I'm not the only listener wanting to know, so please shed some light. I get this question from time to time from people, so I figure why not just answer it here on the podcast. So if you go back and you listen to our weekly intro, obviously the first thing you hear is Brock Lesnar. It's business time, baby. That was Brock Lesnar calling out Seth Rollins before their triple threat match at the Royal Rumble with John Cena. He started saying, for whatever reason that night, it's like the only night he's ever done this, he started saying the word baby a lot. You know, he's like, it's business time, baby. And then when Seth comes out, he like calls out Seth and Seth doesn't come out. And then he's like, that's what I thought, baby. It's like, after that, I don't think I ever heard him use the word again. So that's what that's from. Then you hear Paul Heyman here, my client. And then he said, Danny's like, there's some kind of soundbite that you inserted. I can't make out what it is. It's Broken Matt. It's Broken Matt saying delete. So that's what you hear there. Obviously, Paul Heyman is the one saying, you know, my client, Brock Lesnar. This doesn't make any sense. I get this a lot. People mistake this. They think it's someone who it isn't. I'm here to just settle this once and for all, because I would know. I pulled the clip. The person who says this doesn't make any sense, besides being me every single week, is Kane. And that was during the period where Kane and Bryan were still doing the Team Hell No thing. It was in a backstage segment. I don't remember exactly the context. I want to say that maybe Bryan was awarded a U.S. or an Intercontinental title match, and everybody had walked off, and Kane, I think, was standing there by himself. And whatever it was that happened, he just said, this doesn't make any sense. Which, again, is what I find myself saying almost every week when Raw goes off the air. Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan. Obviously, Daniel Bryan. That was from the interview that I conducted with him in Miami. In fact, I think it was the day before, or 2 days before, he lost the world heavyweight title in 18 seconds to Sheamus. And the Yes Movement was born. So that was back in 2012. That was Sound Off episode 212, for anybody who wants to go back and hear all those interviews. He's fat. People sometimes say, well, what is he saying there? It's like, he's something, he's like, he's a cat. Like, no, he's fat. And that was Scott Steiner talking about Samoa Joe in TNA. That was back when Steiner, I think, was part of the Main Event Mafia. He wrote here, you would have been beat up properly. Sounds like Macho Man, but what is the context? It is Macho Man. That is not what he's saying. This was the promo that Randy Savage cut after he beat Ric Flair for the championship at WrestleMania 8. If you remember that match, it was a wild finish. Flair grabbed Elizabeth after the match was over. What about me? What about me? And then he kissed her on the lips, and Elizabeth slapped the shit out of him, and Savage ran after him, and Perfect went after Savage's leg, his knee. They beat him down. So Savage was a fucking madman, because even though he won the title, this guy kissed his wife. Imagine doing that to Elizabeth in real life back then when Savage was all wound up. Like, you wouldn't be alive right now. Savage was just a madman. So he didn't care that he won the championship. He's back there cutting a promo with Sean Mooney or Mean Gene or whoever it was. And he's just going off on Flair. He goes, I want the whole Flair package. And he says, you haven't been beat up properly. I haven't properly beaten you up yet. So that was the context for that. Woo comes from a gentleman by the name of Ric Flair, in case you didn't know. And then he also wanted to know at the very end of the show in our outro, if you ever listen to the very end of the show, you hear a female voice in a very confused manner saying the name of the podcast. She's like, Solo Monster Sounds Off. So if you're a newer listener, you probably wouldn't understand the context. This show was nominated for a Stitcher Award back in 2013, I believe it was. That was back when Stitcher was still having actual award ceremonies. I don't think they've had one in the last 2 years. But we were up for an award, and they had the woman who hosts... There's another podcast, very popular podcast, called The Grammar Girl. And Grammar Girl was the one who was doing the nominations, running off the names of all the shows in our category. I think it was the sports category. And so she got to the name of my show, and she sounded kind of confused when she said it. And so that was kind of how it came off. She just said it like almost like in the form of a question, you know, like Solo Monster Sounds Off. So that was the Grammar Girl attempting to say the name of my podcast back in 2013 at the Stitcher Awards. So there you go. Now you have all the background and all the context and all the audio clips, which means now I got to go change them all. Ariel from the Dominican Republic, buy or sell on the better heel, Hollywood Hogan or Hollywood Rock? Now, you guys know how much I love Hollywood Rock. That was one of the greatest incarnations, maybe my favorite, honestly, all-time incarnation of The Rock. And it only lasted like 3 months. It's like, I think back to when Shawn Michaels turned heel in the summer of 2005, how great he was, how much of a natural heel this guy was, and it lasted 2 months. I just think back to like heel HBK in 05, Hollywood Rock in 03, all the potential, just the wasted potential. Even Batista. Now, when Batista left in 2010, I guess it was, right? 2010, he turned heel. He came out, he looked like a member of the Village People, no shirt, leather vest, championship over his shoulder, talking about John Cena kissing babies and fat people and all that kind of stuff. I love that Batista. Batista was great, but it only lasted 3 months. It started in like February, and by May he was gone. It's like, this happens time and time again, where these guys find their niche, it's like, all right, this is awesome, they're so entertaining, and then a few months later they're gone. So, as much as I love Hollywood Rock, that's kind of my long-winded way of saying that I have to buy on Hollywood Hogan and sell on Rock, because you're asking me who is the better heel. Well, Rock tried. He really did. He tried. Even in that infamous Toronto promo, by the end of it, people were booing the shit out of him. So he had a way to kind of turn the crowd against him, but I don't think people wanted to boo him. I think people were so entertained by him and they found him so funny that I would not look at Hollywood Rock as this great heel. He was this great character, but I don't know how good of a heel was he, right? How good of a heel could he be if people, you know, would cheer him or just couldn't get enough of him? Hogan, now you also got to, you know, put this in the context of who did bigger business. It's unfair because Hollywood Hogan was around for a few years. Hollywood Rock lasted 3 months. He did get a big WrestleMania match out of it with Steve Austin. He did get a pay-per-view match out of it with Bill Goldberg. But Hollywood Hogan made WCW a lot of money. Hollywood Hogan was the glue. I mean, the NWO would not have worked were it not for Hogan being in there. So he deserves a lot of credit for making that NWO thing work. And that was WCW at its peak when the NWO was in full force and Hogan had the title and Sting was in the rafters and Hollywood Hogan was the primary heel foil. And he was hated. People hated him. They throw garbage at him. It's not like they secretly wanted to cheer him. They fucking hated this guy. So when I think who was the better heel, you may not be a Hogan fan, you may be a huge Rock fan, but you gotta be honest about this. Hollywood Hogan was a much bigger, much better heel than Hollywood Rock. So that's why I'm buying on Hogan and I'm selling on Rock. So now it's time to get to number 6 in our countdown of the top 9 greatest WWE promos, my favorite 9 WWE interviews of all time. And it is that time that Paul Heyman dropped his own pipe bomb on Vince McMahon on the November 15th, 2001 episode of SmackDown. This was in the middle of the invasion. I have gone off on this invasion so many times. I'm sure you've heard it ad nauseum. I'm not going to get into it again, but this was after WWE had bought WCW and they did this great angle in July because Paul Heyman had replaced Jerry Lawler on commentary earlier in the year. Lawler had left in protest. He quit because his wife, the cat, Stacy Carter, had been released. So Paul Heyman took his place. ECW was basically dead. And I liked the commentary team of JR and Heyman because the tension there was real. So when JR would go off, and I even put a clip up that somebody ripped from, it might have been SummerSlam. These two guys were going at it, and then the clip just ends with, like, Ross, like, he can't take it anymore. Like, he has to just stop the discussion, and he just tells Heyman to, like, kiss his ass. Like, these two guys, they did a tremendous job of just tapping into all of the things that they hated about each other and just letting it play out on screen. It was great. In fact, JR says that one of his favorite partners to work with was Heyman. So Heyman was on commentary, and they did this great angle. I'll never forget it. July 9th. It was the July 9th. I'm almost positive that's the day. You can go back and check. If that was a Monday, then that was the day. July 9th, 2001. That was the episode of Raw where it was Chris Jericho and Kane against... Oh, God, who were they against? I don't even remember now. Lance Storm. And it was Lance Storm and someone else representing WCW. And that was the night that Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam ran in and made their WWE debuts. So they run in and they attack Jericho and Kane. All of a sudden, all these guys, these WWF guys, come running down from the back. Taz, Raven, the Dudley Boys. But you kind of notice, yes, they're WWF guys, but there's something a little weird about this because everybody who ran down, Rhino may have been out there. They're also former ECW guys. So they get in the ring and there's a standoff. And Jericho and Kane are in the corner, and all of a sudden, all the WWF guys that used to be in ECW, they do a slow turn. And JR played this up great on commentary. He's like, what the hell is this? And all of a sudden, they all gang up on Jericho and Kane. And you realize, oh shit, now we've got an ECW invasion. So Paul Heyman gets up off commentary, he gets in the ring. That was one of the most, that was maybe the best thing they ever did, the best angle they ever did as part of that invasion. That was in the middle of the show. And it left you so excited for, like, oh my God, this is awesome. You've got WCW guys. Now you've got ECW as their own, like, rogue renegade force. It's amazing how you can go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows because an hour later, they merged the two. They merged WCW and ECW, and Stephanie McMahon walked out as the new owner of ECW. Dead. Buried. It only took an hour to kill that great angle. So, Heyman was kind of a mouthpiece for the Alliance. They ended up calling them the Alliance. And this was 6 days before Survivor Series. This was going to be the big winner-take-all match. It was Team WWF against the Alliance, and whoever won, well, you know, they would take over. They would take over Raw. They would take over SmackDown. WWF could die in that Survivor Series match on Sunday. And, you know, Heyman's out there, and he says WWF's going to die on Sunday, and don't blame me. I'm not the one who ruined everything that was accomplished by Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then you heard the clip at the top of the show. You know, have you watched the television show lately? Vince McMahon has lost his mind. The man doesn't have it anymore. He is a has-been. His ideas are antiquated. His concepts are draconian. And, you know, here we are now, 15 years later. And if Heyman walked out on TV tomorrow night and recited those exact same words, those lines, word for word, ask yourself this. Would you disagree with him? Have things changed? Would you disagree with him if he came out and said the exact same thing tomorrow night? See, I think I know the answer already to the question, but ask yourself anyway. You could argue that, you know, the network was Vince's idea and he was ahead of the curve when it came to that. But in terms of, like, what you see on TV, in terms of the creative end of things, it's incredible. It's incredible to think that this was said 15 years ago, and the same could be said today. So what I want to do right now, because it's such a good promo, I can't do it justice by just repeating lines. I'm going to play most of it for you. So this is 5 or 6 minutes, however long it is. I'm going to play to you the promo that Paul Heyman cut on Vince McMahon once Vince came out, because he was calling Vince out. And Vince came out, and Vince just stood there. He didn't say a word, and he allowed Paul Heyman to basically shoot all over him. And this is the Paul Heyman pipe bomb, if you want to call it that, on Vince McMahon from SmackDown in 2001.
I want you to know that I was down on my knees, because I know that you're used to men kissing your ass, Vinny. Every time you walk in the back there, there's Patterson and Briscoe. Oh, what a great idea you had, Vince. You like men kissing your ass, don't you, Vince? Huh? Because that's what you're all about. A billionaire. The billionaire Vince McMahon. The creator of sports entertainment. I've waited so long to see you face to face like this. And I've waited so long to tell you to your face that I hate your stinking guts. But it's not just me. It's your children that hate your stinking guts, Vince. And at Survivor Series, your children are going to do to you what I have waited my whole life to see somebody do to you, Vince. You are, so help me God, the most disgusting, vile son of a I've ever seen in my life. You took Hulk Hogan's blood and you built Titan Towers. You stole Bret Hart's dream and with that money bought yourself an airplane with WWF all over it. You did that and you know it, you son of a You stole Shawn Michaels' smile, took your company public, and made yourself a billionaire. But not a self-made billionaire like you like to tell everybody you are. Oh, no. See, you're a billionaire on other people's hard work. Your father, Vince McMahon. Your father went around the country and shook the hand of every... You know I'm telling the truth, don't you? You know in your heart, I'm telling you the truth, that your father shook the hand of every promoter in this country and swore to them that he'd never compete against them, that his son would never compete against them. And when your father died, you competed. And with your ruthless, merciless, take no prisoners attitude, you drove everybody out of business. didn't you, Vince? You ran all the competition into the ground and you stole all their ideas and you made yourself a billionaire out of it. And you know whose ideas you stole the most, Vince? You stole mine. See, I don't give a damn about Don Owen and Sam Muchnick and Jim Crockett. I care about what you did to me and my family. How you stole my dreams. How you stole my legacy. How you stole everything that ECW represented. Because while Doink the Clown had a green hair and a rubber nose, Stone Cold Steve Austin was drinking his first beer in ECW, damn you. While Bobby Heenan and Gene Okerlund were dancing around singing Tutti Frutti, ECW was producing the edgy TV that you named Attitude. Oh, we got Attitude. You got nothing, man. What you got is my ideas, and you stole my life, my money, my legacy. Screw you. Screw you and your family. I tell you something. Your old children hate your guts. And on Sunday, your children are going to get even with you for everything that you stole from me, for everything that you stole from them. You flaunt your affairs in front of your wife. You flaunt your affairs in Playboy for your children to read. You look at Taz. Look at Taz. This man was a killer. He was a machine. He was a wrestler. A great wrestler. A real man. But wrestling's a dirty word to you, isn't it, Vince? Your father built a wrestling company. And you had to have sports entertainment. We had to have sports entertainment. Ha, ha, ha. He was a wrestler. He was a great wrestler. He was a man. And now he's a fat, little, obnoxious color commentator. And not even a good one. He is a sports entertainer. He is not a wrestler. Because you made wrestling a dirty word. You made wrestling a dirty word, Vince.
It was so good. It was so good. And what made it so good, again, it's this whole work shoot thing where you mix reality and storyline together. It's very effective. I mean, we saw it with the Bret Hart promo last week. That was number 7 on the countdown. We see it here again. Heyman's delivery was just pitch perfect, especially when he gets to the part about Vince stealing his ideas and his legacy, and he throws the hat at him, and you couldn't see it there, obviously, but he takes his hat off and he throws it at him. Just how animated he gets. And, you know, talking about how Vince put all the promoters out of business after his father died and stole Heyman's ideas and branded it Attitude. The reality is, what you saw on WWF television in the late 90s was absolutely the product of ECW. The tables, the blood, the hardcore division, all that stuff. Where do you think it came from? It was a toned-down, more mainstream version of ECW. You know, it was ECW without the extreme violence with the barbed wire and the cursing and the music that they had no rights to use, which somehow they got away with. And yeah, the few episodes of ECW that I've gone back and tried to watch that I didn't watch back then, but they have all the ECW shows on the network. People have said, like, it's not the same. It's not the same because they've edited out all the music, and it's just not the same. Now, me, if I were to go back and watch them all, it may not matter as much to me because I don't have that same context. I watch so infrequently that maybe it wouldn't matter to me. But I guess it is a shame that they can't air those episodes in their original form, because I guess it probably takes away from it in some way. But that's what WWF was in the late 90s. It was a stripped-down, more mainstream, acceptable version of ECW. The ECW influence, you could even say that to an extent WCW borrowed as well, but more so WWF, they absolutely borrowed ideas from ECW. I love the part where he said that Vince made wrestling a dirty word. You made wrestling a dirty word, Vince. Wrestling was already a dirty word. Vince just, you know, he doesn't like that whole old school wrestling. He said as much when he did the interview with Steve Austin. Steve Austin just kept saying wrestling over and over again. Had to keep correcting himself. And Vince is like, that's what my father did. It's like, no, you moron, that's what you do. You can call it whatever you want to. At the end of the day, it's still wrestling. You've got a ring, right? You've got a ring. You've got people that go in the ring and wrestle. It's wrestling. Let's just call it what it is. His comments about Taz, I actually thought this was really funny. I laughed when he called Taz a fat little obnoxious color commentator, and not even a good one. That was a great line. Then Taz, it cuts off before Taz gets into the ring, and he chokes out Heyman and leaves him laying. So, of course, we all know how the story goes. Team WWF won, and the following Monday on Raw, Heyman was fired, and Jerry Lawler came back to the company and took his seat back at the booth next to JR. And we didn't see Heyman again until April, right after WrestleMania 18. He disappeared until after WrestleMania, and when he reappeared, he had someone with him, and that someone was Brock Lesnar. And so the Brock Lesnar era began. We are still in the Brock Lesnar era today. Heyman and Lesnar are still together today. That was a partnership, a union that I think worked out pretty well for both guys. And so that's number six in our countdown. Paul Heyman's worked shoot on Vince McMahon from SmackDown 15 years ago, almost to the month. So we're getting to the top five. Next week here on the podcast, we'll do number five next weekend. At some point, I will have like honorable mentions. People keep making suggestions to me. Like, they don't understand. The list is set. Like, there's no changing the list. It's my list, first of all. I mean, it's my personal list, but the list is set. There ain't no changing it. But yes, there are a lot of promos I had to leave out, some of which are probably going to appall some people, but I couldn't fit them all in. But I'll have a reading of the honorable mentions at some point when we get closer to the end. But the top five, final five, we are going to be revealing over the next 5 weeks. So that should be fun. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you do so. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. I'll be live tweeting during the Clash of Champions show tonight. We'll put the poll up. You can vote. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Also, don't forget, take part in Wrestle Rumble. Go to WrestleRumble.com. It's $10 for a single entry. And $20 will net you 3 entries. It's a Clash of Champions pick'em contest. You accrue points. The person with the most points, you could win up to $500 and 2 lower-level seats to NXT Toronto in November. So go to WrestleRumble.com, sign up, and fill out your entry form before the kickoff show ends tonight. That is the deadline. We will be back with a brand new podcast next weekend. That'll be episode 463. There'll be plenty to talk about, I am sure. And tonight also, with the pay-per-view being on the network, might be a good night to subscribe to our YouTube channel. YouTube.com/TheSolemonster is the place to go for that. So when and if a Clash of Champions review goes up later tonight, you will be able to get it there first. And you'll be notified once the video goes up. So please subscribe on YouTube. Until next weekend, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. If you're watching, enjoy debate night tomorrow night. It's a lot to choose from on Monday night in terms of what to watch on TV. And we'll see you back here again next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.